This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Coming up in the 5 o'clock hour, Mean Text, so you still have time to get creative. Text in your submissions for the week, 421-3776. That's 421-ESPN, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, a man who filled in admirably in your absence, Dave, and I was accused of wearing smaller shirts so that I could look comparable to this man, but it just doesn't work. It's not going to work. He's got legs hanging off his shoulders. We're talking about the one, the only Robert Turbin is with us. What's going on, man?
What's up, fellas? I'm doing good. How you guys doing?
We're good, man. It's good to talk to you again. And unfortunately, we're not talking about a playoff game in front of us. And what do you think about that? So we're sort of going season in review here. And want to get your take on a few different things. And let's start with what's become the most interesting storyline with this team coming out of this season was the way Rashad Penny ended the season. He had four games where he was just out of his mind, and then put the capper on it against a good defense. I was kind of qualifying the first three games, Turbo, saying, well, it's awesome that he did it, but he did it against the Texans, the Lions, the Bears, who all had terrible defenses, terrible rush defenses. But Cardinals were a decent run defense, and he put up 190 on them. So what do you make of what we saw out of him to end the season?
Yeah, and I would argue, I mean, despite those other teams not being very good on defense, I mean, anytime you're running the ball upwards of 150 yards, and you know, that's saying a lot, you know, especially, you know, a couple of those games are under 20 carries. And then, you know, we were doing the broadcast show, and you know, I mentioned, man, I would love to see Rashad Penny get at least 20 and see what he can do with 20. And he took 20 and he freaking ran like a, you know, like a bat out of hell. And it was just great to see, more so just because of everything he's gone through so far in his career. It just kind of shows, you know, obviously had a lot of ups and downs and injuries and things like that. But, you know, he really displayed his mental fortitude to be able to overcome some of those things and, you know, really perform at an extreme high level. Putting in the Seahawks, you know, putting the Seahawks really in the bind on whether or not to bring Rashad back, which everybody is hopeful that he will be.
Well, Turbo, you know this better than anyone. Running backs just get pounded. I mean, it's you know, it's one of those positions where you're going to have to play hurt. And I wonder if that's what you think Penny figured out. There was a play in the game against Arizona this most recently, where he has a pretty good run, and then he kind of is rubbing he's wincing and he's rubbing his knee. And I thought, oh boy, this is typically when, you know, he pats his helmet and takes himself out of the game. But he comes back later and ends up with a 62-yard touchdown and, you know, ran tough. Do you think that was the difference? I mean, did he maybe figure out how to ignore some of those little aches and pains during the game, or do you think it was something else? And I've been posing the question, Robert, like, what in the world did AP, Adrian Peterson, say to him? You know, so I don't know. What do you think about that?
Yeah. Well, we have to ask Rashad what he said. One of the things that I learned, though, as a young player is you're going to have to play through injuries. You know, when I was a young player, veterans, you know, because when you're young, you don't really believe in injury. Like, you don't think, you feel like you're invincible, you're young, you can do anything, you can do it forever. And the reality is, in this sport, that's just not the case. And veterans are constantly reminding guys that, you know, you're never, coaches even, you're hardly ever going to be 100% going into the game. That's just a fact of the matter. You know, you're going to play the game, obviously, at whatever your 100% is for that day. And, you know, maybe that's just something, maybe that's a mental hurdle, really, more than anything, that Rashad had to overcome as it pertains to, you know, these nicks and these bruises and not feeling 100% healthy all the time. Was that an Adrian Peterson influence? It could have been, but I think either way, it was a mental hurdle that he overcame, and that's why you saw a lot of success from him, you know, late in the season there.
Well, Turbo, it seems like even Pete and Penny himself are giving AP a ton of credit for this turnaround, and I'm just they never got specific in terms of what was actually said, as you guys were just talking about. So I'm just trying to think, no matter what it was, how come the coaches didn't think of that? Or is it just a matter of hearing it from somebody that you, I guess, idolize on some level?
Coaches can't have the same influence as a player can to another player. 2016, I had one of my best seasons as a player, and a huge part of that, I give a lot of credit to the fact that I had the opportunity to be teammates with Frank Gore, and I just saw how a Hall of Fame running back operated on a daily basis, every day, before practice, in the morning, what he ate, how he warmed up, his routine after practice, how he took care of his body, film study. All the sorts of things, you know, the things that he's looking at when he's out there on the field, what is on his mind, what is he thinking. And, man, I was able to take a lot from that, you know, led the team in touchdowns that year. You know, and it's not about me, but I'm using that as an example of, you know, how a player influence can really make the difference on another player, especially someone who's young in their career.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, man. I mean, you get a compliment or, you know, advice from somebody who, you know, you look up to a little bit. I mean, that's huge. So, go ahead.
That was, you know, I grew up watching Frank Gore, right? He played for the 49ers, you know, Bay Area kid. So definitely, you know, definitely an idol for me.
Yeah, that guy is one of my favorite players of all time. I just think he is the toughest dude. I think he had both of his ACLs. By the way, how did he do in the fight, Bob? He lost.
He lost.
Oh man.
Yeah. He lost. It was. I won't say it was ugly, but it was fun to watch.
He didn't know what he was doing.
Well, both of them look pretty.
He's got some technique stuff to. You guys would know better than I would, but he's got some technique stuff to work on. But it was good to see him fight. It was cool to see him out there.
Yeah, they both looked a little raw, to say the very least, and they did make it did turn into a meme. He did get hit clean on the chin, and his eyes just popped wide open, like, what the hell was that? Yeah. What are you doing? It was a pretty funny shot.
Well, Turbo, the other thing, I'm curious, and the guy that really stood out to me, and look, offensive line play is really hard to judge. You know, a lot of times, you know, we'll have Big Ray come on, and, you know, he kind of opened your eyes to some of the things that are going on. But it looked like Phil Haynes was really blocking well at the end of the year. But as far as, you know, the offensive line, you know, obviously Rashad Penny had some help. You know, I mean, there were some pretty good holes blown in the defensive line that he was running through. But, you know, still, it was, you know, I thought the whole difference mostly was Penny. But what did you see out of the offensive line at the end of the year from a running back's perspective?
Yeah, they started to play like a collective unit. And Big Ray is the expert, man. I'm telling you right now, Big Ray knows a lot about the offensive line. But they started to feel like a collective unit, and they got into a position where they could attack defenses, where I think for most of the season, they were always, you know, kicking back for a pass or something like that. Or obviously our time of possession, we know, wasn't very high for our team. And so they could just never kind of get in rhythm together and find that cohesiveness out there on the field. And then, you know, we're down a score or two scores and we get away from the run game, and now they can't impose their will now on a defender. And so that changed toward the end of the season there, those last four games. And we were able to run the ball and run the ball efficiently. I think our offensive lineman was a little bit pissed off, and it showed, and they played like it. And they took their anger out on the opposing teams with the way that the season was going. So it was great to see. Yeah, Rashad gets a lot of credit for what he did, and deservedly so. But, man, those yards aren't there without the offensive line. They did a fantastic job opening up a lot of holes. And really where Rashad shined and where most running backs need to shine the most is in those second and third levels. And that's what you saw from Rashad, man. The offensive line, they took care of that first level. Boom. Rashad's able to break a tackle in the second level, make a guy miss in the third level, which is key, and go big for a touchdown, man. So collectively, those guys played lights out.
Turbo, I love that some things never die. You're still dapping up and giving love to your offensive linemen. And that's just a running back. That's what you do, right?
Always, man. We don't exist. We don't exist without the old line. There's nothing we can do.
So what would you do if you were the GM? Let's put you in that GM role going into this offseason. You got three of those
off. That's my dream job, right?
That's right. But you got to make the tough decisions now with people you like. And they got three offensive linemen that are free agents. You got Dwayne Brown, who still is probably the best offensive lineman on this team, but you could argue took a step back this year. He wasn't the same. He's going to be 37. You've got Ethan Posick, who's kind of up and down, ended the season well, but we'll see how you feel about him. And Brandon Schell, who took a step back and then got injured. What do you do with those three guys?
Well, obviously, we know that we've got a ton of cap space, and there's some things we can do in free agency. So, yeah, I got to look out there and see who's available I don't think you prioritize any of those three guys, you know, to be frank. I love Dwayne Brown, obviously, but, I still think you have to do your due diligence as a general manager to see what's out there, you know, see what's available. Maybe there's a guy at left tackle who, you know, may not be as good as Dwayne Brown right now, but, certainly has the potential to grow and get better, maybe has a higher ceiling, than what Dwayne Brown has right now, being 37 years old. Obviously you have to look at, what guys are going to cost. And so for me, those three guys, they're not a priority to bring back. If I'm the GM, I'm gonna look at the field. I'm gonna see if there's a better player than Ethan Posick and a better player than who's the other guy that you mentioned?
Brandon Schell.
Yeah, a better player than Brandon Schell. Not that those guys aren't good players, but there potentially could be some better talent out there.
Hey, Turbo, my son Jake was a security guy back when you were like a rookie, your second year. Weren't you roommates with Russell?
Yeah, Russell and I, we were roommates for four years, I think it was.
Yeah. So can you tell us something like you hear people say about Russ that's false? Like, I'm not asking you to divulge any secrets or anything like that, but when you hear people talk about Russ or the way they think about him and things like that, is there, being his roommate, you know, what can you tell us? Do you ever hear things you're like, oh, that's not Russ, that's not true?
I apparently a lot of people feel like he lives under a rock or something and just isn't aware of, life in general. And, I would say that's false. You know, he may not have grown up like everybody else, but he certainly is in the know. I'll leave it at that. Okay.
Hey, Robert, one thing we were talking about earlier in the show is one of the kind of head-scratching things about this team is how long it took them to sort of find any sort of rhythm at all on offense. And certainly Russ being hurt is a huge part of that, and Chris Carson got hurt, and the line wasn't playing well. But you got a brand-new play caller in there in Shane Waldron, and they were kind of struggling after the Colts game, even before Russell got hurt. They couldn't put together two good halves, and you and I talked about that even. But to hear DK Metcalf after game 16 against the Lions saying, well, I think we've finally got the wrinkles ironed out, and Shane's getting to know us, and I'm thinking, man, it's game 16 that's done now. Why do you think it took that long? Was it just having a new voice and having those problems with Russell's injury and Chris Carson's injury and I guess everything? It seemed like it took a long time for them to sort of find any rhythm at all.
Yeah, I think it's a combo. You go into the season expecting to have certain players go down. Now you have to adjust. And that just, that adds more wrinkles to what DK was saying. And then you have to take into the fact that not only is this Shane Waldron's first year as a offensive coordinator, but it's his first year as offensive coordinator ever. Never even called plays before in the NFL. And so, you know, that's a huge adjustment. And then if you go back to the spring where, you know, we're not really having OTA and having opportunity to, kind of get those extra reps that you normally would before a pandemic and stuff like that. And so it just puts you at a disadvantage. You know, all the Zoom stuff is cool, but it's all mental and it doesn't equate to being on the field. And you can't, you know, it's difficult to start right at training camp there at the end of July and say, oh, you know, we have this new offense and first time play caller. And, we're going to have this thing dialed in by week four and we're going to be, you know, hitting our stride and we're going to be on fire and nobody's going to be able to stop us. No, it makes sense actually that it took 16 weeks with all of that, with all of those disadvantages, coming for this team.
Hey, Turbo, and again, I'm not asking you to reveal any, you know, any inside information or personal stuff, but you're pretty tight with Bobby. You guys went to Utah State together. What do you think about his season and going forward? Do you think he's going to be a Seahawk and, you know, or do you, I just can't picture him in any other uniform.
Yeah, me either. And I don't anticipate it. Obviously, they'll probably have some numbers to work out contract wise. And, Bobby, he'll handle that the way that he feels is best for him and his family and the team and the Seahawks will do the same, but I don't expect Bobby going anywhere. I think he'll be a Seahawk next year. And I feel like he had a great season. He's still one of the top linebackers, in the league. I thought he had a great season. You know, he may not be, you know, the same player he was, you know, 6 or 7 years ago, but who is? You know, who is 10 years into their career? But he's still very, very productive, still a top linebacker in the league, and he'll be a Seahawk next year.
Hey, one thing we were talking about, you know, we were just talking about the offense trying to find their rhythm. They've got a new play caller, all the things that went into, you know, making it a tough sledding this year. On the defensive side of things, what do you think it is? You know, they went for a month, they were allowing over 450 yards and over 21 points a game. They did that last year. They started last year off in horrible fashion. This is not a new defense. This is not a new voice with Ken Norton. This is Pete's defense. This is Ken Norton. This is Bobby Wagner's been there, and Quandre Diggs was there the year before. Jamal was the year. You had a lot of returning faces. What do you think happens? Why do they, on that side of the ball, get off to the starts they have the past couple of years, do you think?
Yeah, well, a lot of returning faces, but a lot of new faces as well. Sometimes you go into a new season on both sides of the football, even special teams, and you want to install some new stuff. You know, you want to be able to throw other teams off by installing some new wrinkles and within your defense. And you feel like you have the scheme and the players to fit that and what you want to do. And so you you don't always completely change it, but you alter your defense or your offense or whatever it is to, you know, see if this is going to – you feel like this is going to work better for us going into – this year. And sometimes what happens is, and the reality is that puts you at a disadvantage. And what happens is you put in a scheme that takes away from what your players' strengths are, what they're good at. And I think that's what you saw with our defense in the beginning of the season. You know, we're doing some different things. We're trying new things. And, you know, we're kind of taking away from what our players do well, actually, on the defensive side of the ball. And once we got back to that, then our defense started performing really well.
Hey, Turbo, Bob mentioned you're still working out. And, first of all, I wanted to say, you know, driving into every game, listening to the pregame show, you did a great job. Really, really fun to listen to your perspective. But, as far as you, last I heard that you're still working out, you would play if a team gave you the opportunity. But Tell us where you are with that, and then, you know, other than being a huge radio star, what are some of the other things that are interesting to you? I mean, would you ever go into coaching or anything like that?
No, my dream job is to be a GM.
Okay.
I'm to be a general manager. And so there's this sports management course through the NFLPA that I'm getting ready to start. And so, you know, it's contracts and all of these things, CBAs that goes into this course and you learn about it. So I'm going to be doing that and, you know, working out. You know, I love training. I love getting up in the morning, and it just kind of sets my day off the way it needs to be, you know, goal setting and all that kind of stuff. And it just kind of became it's kind of become a lifestyle. I didn't get an opportunity to play, obviously, this season. And, you know, if I'm, you know, I mean, you've been through it, Dave. You know what it is, man. So, you know, likely that is probably it, you know, officially. And I'm okay with that, man. You know, there's some cool, you know, business opportunities out there for me. Obviously, the broadcasting, I'm doing some cool stuff with my foundation here in Seattle. Working on the watch. I'm under NDA, so I can't really disclose that. But, but yeah, doing some cool projects, you know, with my foundation and the philanthropic work and stuff like that. Love giving back to the community. That's always been a huge priority for me. But, you know, my dream job is to be a GM, and that's what I'm going after right now.
Well, hopefully you'll be
a coach. But good.
Yeah. Hopefully you'll become that, and you know, when you get those classes and get everything, we'll have you on. You'll be our contract salary cap expert.
There you go. I'll be the new John Clayton.
There we go. Yeah. There we go. You're breaking down all the numbers, talking about cap room, and talking way over our heads.
Yeah, well, that's what he specialized in, right? When he was first kind of doing his thing, he was like, at least from what I understand, he was kind of like the first person to really understand like the ins and outs of the contracts and everything like that. So Everybody wanted to have him on everywhere.
It was funny. One of the days you were gone, Dave, and we had Clayton on, and Turbo was joking around with him, and Clayton wasn't having it that day at the end of the conversation.
He was not feeling it. Turbo. Yeah, he was not happy that day.
Turbo was like,
all I was trying to do, Dave, was give him some advice on, you know, if he's feeling a little bit under the weather. You know, I got, you know, a little apple cider vinegar and some other things, you know what I mean, might help that. He wasn't even like that.
Yeah. Turbo goes, he's not in a good mood today.
The grumpy John Clayton sometimes, yeah.
I still love him, though. It's all good.
Oh, he's the best. Good.
Turbo, we appreciate you, man. Thanks so much for hopping on with us. Happy New Year. I know it's belated, but we haven't spoken since the New Year, so Happy New Year to you, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Robert.
There you go. There's Robert Turbin with us, who did a great job filling in while you were out. And it was funny that day where we let John go, and he's like, "Ooh, man, he was not having it today."
John wasn't into joking around or imagination.
And Turbin was giving him some, because John was hacking and he was under the weather. And he was like, "Hey, man, go get yourself some, I can't remember what else, apple cider vinegar and some other things." And John was like, "Where am I going to get that? Why can't I can't find it anywhere. I can't go anywhere." You know, he was just kind of just almost arguing with him. I'm like, man, just trying to give you some advice on things you could take to help you feel better.
Very funny.
But our thanks to Robert Turbin. If you missed any of that conversation with Turbo or any of our guests this week, all you need to do is go to the podcast page at 710sports.com. You can also search Wyman and Bob on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. Just search Wyman and Bob. And then once you get there, just click subscribe. Then you never have to worry about it again. Just downloads every day automatically. You don't even have to consider it. All right. Coming up, what happened at middle linebacker this season? We'll take into account some things that happened and what are some of the solutions for 2022. That's coming your way next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Got some good mean texts rolling in. You guys keep that going. We'll unveil your creations at 5:45 today. It's what, if you're new to the program, it's what we do every Friday. We collect your mean texts throughout the week and unveil the most creative ones every Friday. So you guys can text in 421-3776. That's 421-ESPN, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. All right. We touched on Bobby Wagner with Robert Turbin, who joined us in the previous segment. Again, in case you're just tuning in and you missed that conversation, Robert's always great. So you can check that out on the podcast page after the show at 710sports.com. But, you know, Bobby Wagner gets named a second team All-Pro. He's a guy who's got a massive reputation for very good reason. He's been one of the elite linebackers in this league for a long time. And then even Robert, who's a good buddy of his, says, listen, he's not the same guy he was, you know, 5-6 years ago, but who is? And one of our texters said that Dave Wyman is still the same player he was 5 years ago. I think that was a mean text I had just unveiled, but I thought it was kind of funny. Anyway,
I like it. I love it.
So in terms of, there are things you've pointed out throughout the past couple of years, Dave, that I've just totally keyed in on that as a casual fan, I probably didn't. You know, linebacker play A is much more subtle than a running back, than a quarterback, than a wide receiver. We can all see that. We can all see a throw. He caught it. He didn't catch it. He dropped it. He fumbled. He ran for whatever. Those are very obvious moments. But I think linebacker play and things like that are a bit more subtle in terms of how they should approach things. And Wagner was a guy that you always talk about as linebacker, attacking that line of scrimmage, attack that line of scrimmage. And we saw it when Cody was out there. We see it with Jordan Brooks. You don't really see it with Bobby, and you wondered aloud sort of, well, why, you know, is that just to allow him to make tackles? Is that what coaches want him to do? Is that a business decision on his part? This is how I don't get hurt. What do you think was going on there? Is that a guy getting older, trying to preserve his body because he is playing 100% of the snaps?
I'm going to give you a score here, Bob. That's a great question. Okay. Well, and this is, to me personally, this is the biggest mystery. So, you know, of our mystery theme here.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it's the way they were playing him. So, you know, because he wouldn't just go and do that on his own. If he was playing to preserve his body, so, you know, he can collect his check. I mean, that would be, first of all, it would have to, you know, the coaches would call it out, right? Yeah. I mean, they'd be like, hey, we just paid you $18 million a year. You need to attack the line of scrimmage. You can't catch that block, you know. You can't jump that short route, you know. And, you know, so to me, it's how they're using him is what the mystery is. And the part you mentioned about the 100% snaps, that's what makes it even a bigger mystery is, like, if you're in your 10th year, why are you playing 100% of the snaps? I mean, you should be getting breaks here and there. And especially when you've got, you know, younger guys that you're going to have to fill in later. And that's why Cody Barton never got any snaps at middle linebacker. So, because Bobby was just, but reliable as can be. So, you know, missed nine games in 10 years. But yeah, it was almost like he was like a safety for the front seven. So, like, he was going to kind of hang back and make sure nothing, cuts back on him and nothing seeps through the pile, because he just wasn't playing downhill, aggressive. You know, I always mentioned the 4th-and-2 play against San Francisco, but it's glaring. Because he just is staying away. He's staying away from the line of scrimmage. He's, you know, kind of going backwards and sideways down the line of scrimmage. Is, you know, there's this big mosh pit there. So, yeah, I don't – that part I really did not understand. I didn't understand that part. You know, there was a play I did in football 101 where he didn't attack the guard on the screen play and end up picking up 12, 13 yards and – you know, but that's the way they're allowing him to play. There's no way that that Ken Norton is sitting there going, okay, you know, the way you kind of caught the guard and just retreated like 4 or 5 yards, you can't do that, Bobby. You got to get, you know. No, they're accepting it, obviously. And so they're saying, hey, this is the way we want you to play, and we just want you out on the field. And, you know, there was a couple of big hits that he had. One was on a blitz. I think it was against Tennessee. And he got hit pretty hard, and, you know, there's pretty big contact. But there's just, if you just watch him, he makes a lot of tackles. But, where are the tackles, and you know, and don't just watch the game and then he gets a tackle and count it. You know, you have to really just watch him on every play. And it was kind of interesting to me. I think he's a great football player. His ball skills, you know, interceptions, being able to get fumbles. Remember, he scored the touchdown against San Francisco. That was the linebacker I kind of wanted to be, but I was the other end of the spectrum. I was just a stunt man, basically, Bob. I was
But you were a guy that just ran headfirst into that line of scrimmage. You weren't catching blocks. You were just like, I'm good. There's the wall. I'm running into it.
Yeah. So. And a lot of times not through it. You get stoned every once in a while. But no, it's just a different kind of player. But they obviously accepted that and were all for that. That's the way they were playing him, you know. And then the other thing was that somebody, whether it's Bobby, you know, Pete or Ken, was hell-bent on making sure that he took every single snap. So that was just both of those things are very bizarre to me. And like I said, if you have the games on tape and you go back, I mean, I'm not saying Bobby had a terrible year or anything like that, but if you just watch him and the way that they're playing him, that part was very mystifying to me.
So looking ahead to next year, let's assume he's back. Maybe they restructure the deal or whatever happens. They don't do anything to the deal. He comes back at the salary he's signed to. They restructure, whatever it is. He's back. How would you do it? Would you split duties with him and Cody? All right, hey Bobby, you're in year 11 now. We're gonna preserve you a bit. We're gonna keep you fresh. We need to get this kid some reps because you know there's gonna be a change at some point. Nobody plays forever. We need to see if he's gonna be the guy or not. Would you split time? How would you manage that?
If it's me.
Yeah, assuming Bobby's back. Make that
assumption.
Okay,
if he's back, yeah.
He's back in one form or another, regardless of whatever his contract situation is. He is on this roster next year. How do you manage that?
I would say I would use him situationally. You know, you can't have him out there if that's the way you're using him. Again, I'm not blaming Bobby. I'm just saying that the acceptable way to use him last year was like you wouldn't have him on a short yardage situation. No way. You know, or goal line or anything like that. You know, maybe use him in certain situations where, like I said, his best thing is ball hawking, you know. The other thing about Bobby, too, is my complaint was that they didn't blitz him enough. They should have just blitzed him last year, you know, just a ton because he's so good at it. And, you know, a lot of times he was late getting out of his, you know, getting out of his break and getting into drops and things like that. So, you know, just make it simple. Send him, and I'm not saying do it every play, but I thought they should have done that a little bit more. So that's another way that I would use him.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what they do because good chance he could be back. And one again, contract aside, back on the roster, and they still got to figure out what's the future at that spot coming up. And we'll continue with some of the mysteries of this season. We'll get into some other areas on this team, but the undisputed Y-man champ is back and better than ever. That's coming up next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Tell me why.
Why, man? Why?
Lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
He's a habitual line stepper.
What were you thinking? What are you doing?
Why are you the way that you are?
It's the Why Man of the Week.
It happens every week. And as I say every time, we're lucky that we are provided so much material. We just have to sift through it and see what we can squeeze in each and every week because there's just no shortage of things being said or done out there where you just go, come, why, man? Why would you do that? And somebody who's a first ballot Hall of Famer in the Y-Man Hall of Fame is David on Twitter sent me. He said, in honor of Y-Man today, here's my following up on the Y-Man Hall of Fame. And he's got first ballot Hall of Famers, Colin Cowherd, Stephen A. Smith, Chris Sims, and Antonio Brown. Second ballot, Mike Florio. That's from David on Twitter hitting me up there. You can hit us on Twitter, at Wyman and Bob, or at Bob Stelton on Twitter. But cut number one comes from first ballot Hall of Famer Colin Cowherd on Russ's desire for some changes at the top.
I do believe, and Jay Glazer reported this,
It's a keep your eye on the situation in Seattle. I think Seattle's Pete Carroll is too loyal to Ken Norton. I think the schemes defensively feel outdated. How many offensive coordinators can they go through and offensive line coaches? So I think if you ask Russell Wilson what he wants, it's a new guy at the top. And 70-year-old coach or franchise quarterback, I think the decision is very easy.
Well, he's right about that. I mean, look, we've established, and nothing against Pete, but we've established how, valuable a franchise quarterback is.
Oh, yeah, and I don't disagree with what he said about the defense. I'd also say this, is he always cites, I'm hearing this, and this is what's going on there. How often has he been right? How often... And that's, and I'm asking you, it's not even a rhetorical question. I'm trying to think of, things he said as a matter of fact, and this is what I'm hearing, and this is what it's going to be, and here's what's going to happen. I don't recall him nailing anything. And listen, we all get in the business of making, here's what I think should happen or will happen. We'll see. Yeah, sometimes we're right, sometimes we're wrong. But he says it so emphatically, like, here's a fact. Here's what I know for a fact. And very often, or most often, I don't think it comes to fruition. But he wasn't really making a prediction there other than, Russ wants some change at the top. And then his follow-up is wondering if John Schneider will have the courage to ask ownership to get rid of essentially his boss and Pete Carroll.
Will John Schneider, who has deferred to Pete Carroll on so many drafts, have the guts to lay it out there strongly, encourage or advise the owner and the ownership group to do that? But I just don't think you can run it back if you're Seattle.
First of all, it's Schneider, not Snyder.
it's a
good point you bring up, that how many times, I guess we should start keeping score with Colin Cowherd, like how many times is he right?
Yeah.
So, and again, I think this is the one franchise where you don't want to try to make these predictions, because they don't tell anyone anything, So that's why there's so much speculation, because, everybody's trying to connect the dots, and, you're just kind of grasping in the dark. There's really nothing to go on. Have we determined that maybe Russ's agent, Mark Rogers, is...
That seems to be the assumption. I know Clayton thinks Mark Rogers is feeding Cowherd's info. I don't know if that's true or not. He says things emphatically as if, I just talked to somebody, and he'll cite sources and things like that. But, as far as Schneider deferring to Pete, well, Pete is the last stop. He's the one that gets the final say on player personnel. So it's not about him having courage or anything, or about him, sort of deferring to Pete out of the kindness of his heart. That's sort of the power structure there.
Yeah. Well, and what would be the reason, I guess, for Russ? I mean, the supposed reason for him wanting someone new at the top, a new coach, is that he's not as focused on winning as
he used to be. What would his focus be on then? If it's not winning, they may have two different ideas of how to win, but their goal is the same. The idea that Russ thinks Pete isn't that invested in winning, I'm sorry, I don't buy that at all. Maybe he has an issue with, Russ thinks, hey, I need a new center. And Pete's like, well, I don't know that that's the priority. The priority should be whatever, a pass rusher.
Well, okay, what would those things be? I mean, and look, this is really reaching, but like at the end of the year last year, I think in his last interview with Danny, he was talking about how the most important thing was that we got through this year without any coronavirus issues or something like that. And this was right after the loss to the Rams. He got really into like call to practice and everything for some of the social justice things and everything like that. But I'm just trying to find anything that would indicate that, and I don't think either of those things get in the way of winning. I just think it's something, that he does on the side, just like when he brings people in to talk to the team, or, he has, like, remember they did, which I thought was amazing. They did the social distancing contest by position group, You know, I mean, that's not taking away. It's not taking any focus away. So, you know, I'm just trying to think, like, what would that be? I don't see any indication that that Pete is getting away from winning. Like, he's not focusing on the right things. He competes on everything. So, like I said, when you hear those rumors that, you know, Pete doesn't want to win anymore, I don't see any evidence, and it's just...
Yeah, he's tired of winning. Let's try losing for a while. That seems appealing.
Yeah.
It's so dumb. One more before we get to the break here. Jason Lockonfora feels like Russ is going to be, you know, he was making a little noise last offseason. He feels like we're going to see that again.
If they force him to play out the contract, so be it. I'm not sure Russell Wilson's a guy who would flat out withhold his services, but it has been clear to the Seahawks in the past, and it's going to be abundantly clear to them in the near future that he would like the opportunity to play elsewhere, and obviously he has a no-trade clause.
Boy, you know, that's like Cliff said, the grass is not greener. You know, and Cliff sent that article, Bob,
yeah,
where he was being quoted, and that's basically what he was saying. I mean, where's Russ going to go? I mean, who does he have his eye on as far as somebody out there that wins more or wants to win more than Pete Carroll? I don't know who that would be.
I don't know. We'll see. Maybe Lockenfor will be right. Maybe Cowherd will be right. But I don't know. I haven't heard these things from the people we know or people you know. It's all speculation at this point, unless they've got somebody that's got a microphone in that room with these meetings going on. I don't know. We'll see. But coming up next, the Professor John Clayton joins us as he does every day. You guys can text in any questions you've got for John, 421-3776. That's 421-ESPN, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. It's coming up next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.